Sorry, I didn't count down. Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's the first time I didn't count down.
That's fine. Welcome to Rangers Rundown, your podcast home for all things Texas Rangers. We're going to be talking today about a couple of things that intrigue us here in our late week episode. The Rangers are currently playing the Kansas City Royals, and we want to dig right in. So, I think first things first, we got birthday news today. Happy birthday to Bartolo Colon, turning a young 45 this afternoon.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Big Sexy.
How's that feeling for everybody?
45.
He's a young 45.
Yeah, he is. He looks great.
45's a new 35.
I wonder how long he plans on keeping, staying in the league. I wonder if anybody's asked him that.
I heard him say that he only wanted to play till he was 45, so...
Well, okay.
This could be it. Yeah.
He's done.
Yeah.
You guys talked about it last week for... looking what his career might turn into.
Yeah.
And talking about some, milestones that he's approaching and just the longevity that he's had. There's at some point that I think he's just going to say, okay, that's been fun and time to hang it up. And maybe he has an effective year and he goes out high, or maybe he wants to try it again next year at 46. Should be interesting to watch. He's been a lot of fun. He's been a pretty big revelation for us. Second best pitcher on the team so far this year by most stats now. Mm-hmm. I think Hamels has just squeaked past him with his last two turns and with Bart's go against the Yankees. So it's been fun. And now we have a 45-year-old Bartolo, so hopefully that 45 doesn't mean anything. That there's no wall that you hit when you turn 45.
Yeah. You lose all your talent. There's a couple of interesting things about being 45 and having a career as long as he has had is that... And when it's your birthday, people like to pull up those interesting things and compile them so it's easy for us to find. So there's an article on Cut4, which is an MLB kind of arm that focuses on fun things like Bartolo Colon. And so they just compiled some stats and more facts, fun facts. And one of the ones that I like the most here, it says... that he has pitched to three different father-son combinations: Clay and Cody Bellinger, Eric Young and Eric Young Jr., and Cecil and Prince Fielder, which is...
That's pretty good. I think he's got to be sticking around. He's really hoping that Vladdy Jr. and... I mean, did he pitch against, Bo Bichette? And maybe... I assume he faced Bichette or Fernando Tatis. He's going to try and rack those things up over the next year.
Yeah, that's got to be a record.
I did look, and he did play against Delino DeShields the Elder, mm-hmm. in 2000. It may have been other times as well. So playing alongside the son, he's probably got a decent list of pretty closes. So that's silly.
Will he stick around long enough for Bobby Witt Jr. to make it to the majors?
Yes.
That would be awesome.
Or will he help us, guide us to the promised land that is losing enough games to draft Bobby Witt Jr.?
Well, he's not doing any help with that. I mean, he's been pitching well.
Yeah, he's not doing us any favors.
Bartolo Juan Kenobi.
Yeah.
He did what he could against the Yankees. He knew that he could just throw and give him a whole bunch of home runs in that game.
That's so true.
Whatever. I appreciate mm-hmm. him. He's trying.
Yeah. Yeah. Another stat here. Real quick, just celebrating the oddity that is his career. Trans sports. During his career, which goes back to 1997, the New York Knicks have had 13 different head coaches, which I think says more about the basketball team than Cologne, but still.
Yeah, that's
yeah, and bad. You had one about the Browns, right?
Oh, yeah. It's been at least 28 quarterbacks. The Browns have had 28 starters, and they're like they're new Browns.
Yeah,
so that's it's not so good, not so good. But what is good, at least to me, over the last couple of days, I have been pretty busy, and so I haven't been able to watch all of every game. But I did manage to catch some condongs.
Ha!
Some goosedongs.
Condong goosedong.
Condong goosedong. Yeah. Jurek hit so far, There's some great bad nicknames that you can come up with for Rangers players. And what a series against New York. Condor had a home run in all three games, right?
Yes, he did.
Oof. That's how we drew it up, right? Two out of three?
Yeah. Everyone knew that. We were going to take two from the Yankees. And that Condor Guzman was going to hit home runs off of everybody. You know, noted big-time all-home run hitter, Condor Guzman. I mean, you look at his numbers in the minors. The dude never hit fewer than 40 dingers. That's what he's going to do. He's going to come and he's going to mash lefties. He's just going to plant those things in the upper deck every time.
100%. I think you may be misremembering there.
Yeah.
No, I'm looking at it right here.
Yeah.
I saw it myself.
Yeah, so Guzman, the power is certainly unexpected. And that's, of course, if you were familiar at all with kind of him as a prospect and what's maybe, quote, taken him so long to get to the majors compared to his, you know, his J2 classmate, if you will, Nomar Mazara, has been the power has not been there for a first base prospect. But here he is now, mm-hmm. and just kind of a long exposure, a long look to MLB pitching. And the power is... I mean, it's probably just a little oasis, probably a little flash in the pan, but he's hitting home runs at actually over double the rate than he did in the minor leagues, which is pretty cool. Maybe the baseball mm-hmm. has something to do with that. That's an entirely other podcast, but he's hit three home runs last three games, including yesterday against CC Sabathia, who is left-handed, and Guzman is also left-handed, so that's of note. So it's pretty cool. To see slight adjustments from him. And, I mean, nobody's expecting him to carry the team.
He's still just 23.
Yeah, he's just 23. You know? He doesn't turn 24 until October. And
So sometimes power can take a little bit longer to realize in game, and, you know, folks are still working through swing mechanics, and he's, like, 8 feet tall, so that's obviously going to be something for him. Just learning to use his hands and use that frame to maximize his power and elevate the ball. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see Nomar elevate a little bit more, and he's blossomed into one of the better hitters on the team, if not the best hitter. And it might just take a little bit longer for Condor to find his way as well. I think I asked Kevin on Twitter before, but I've asked one of the comps that I see when I look at that slash line is Brandon Belt. A guy who doesn't hit a ton of home runs, partially because he plays in San Francisco, but who's been a really, really effective and successful first baseman who does hit for some power. And it might just take Condor a little bit longer to settle in. I don't think anyone's expecting him to turn into Joey Votto or even Joey Gallo, but if he can be an above-average regular at first base while playing some really, really nifty defense, I've been very pleased mm-hmm. with Condor's performance in the field. That's a pretty damn good player. Like, that's what you build teams around.
It definitely is. He's rocking a 921 ops over the last seven games, so it's just indicative of that power being there. Really watching him grow as a player.
I'm here for it. Although we're kind of hoping, just for his sake and for the equipment manager's sake, that he's only growing as a player, because, oh boy, that's a lot of laundry if he actually keeps growing.
That's true. Yeah. One thing that I'm looking for as he's, you know, growing and looking for improvements is I went back and looked at his first swim through AAA back in 2016. He had 95 plate appearances with the Express, and he struck out 24% of the time, which in today's day and age is not terrible, actually, but, you know, it could definitely go down. And then his next season, 2017, same league, you know, same competition. He had a full season of at-bats. He had 527 plate appearances. He got that K rate down to 16%, which is much, much better. And so already he has 111 major league plate appearances this season, and he's striking out at a 32% rate. And for a guy that doesn't hit the ball in the seats as often as a Joey Gallo or somebody, you know, you can't live with that. But over the last nine games, he's dropped that down to 19%. And referring back to the way that his bat has taken a while to develop, you know, it's not, I mean, Major League Baseball is really hard. And so just looking for him to make adjustments along the way. So, you know, roughly after 100 plate appearances in AAA, he really started to control the bat a lot better and have a better idea. And you know, it's possible that we're starting to see a change of that for him, and being more confident and being able to recognize pitches better and getting better contact. But, you know, that remains to be seen. And that's honestly one of the biggest kind of shrug kind of things about this season is, well, I guess we'll just get 500, 600 plate appearances from Guzman and see what, yeah, see how that,
we'll find out.
Yeah. See how he likes that and see what we have here. And, you know, that's, we'll see what he has. One more thing, unless you want to add something else after this, is that according to Baseball Savant, against breaking balls, he is batting 194 and slugging 548. So, I don't know. I guess he just guesses right on a couple curve balls or something and, you know, hits him to the
really
gap.
Really Gallo-esque.
Yeah, and then when he is not ready for the breaking ball, he... you know, it owns him or something. I don't know. I thought that was really funny to see.
Mm. That's really bizarre. Yeah. That's really, awesome. Really odd line.
Yeah. But keep hitting home runs, man. And plus, it's really fun to tweet out Goose Dong.
It is.
That is really good.
Goose Dong.
Yeah.
Okay, so Condor is one of those young guys who's getting his chance with the big league team this year. We've got a couple others that we've talked about before. Talked about with Kevin, the most notable being Willie Calhoun, who should be seeing his time with the Rangers start pretty soon. But there's still a couple of kids out on the farm who are worth talking about. So we touched on a couple of these names when we had Kevin on, but we wanted to kind of go back and talk about it some more because Down East is actually starting to look like a pretty salty little baseball team. I think everybody knew coming into the year that they were going to be our best minor league affiliate, at least until some of the short season teams started up. We often have some pretty exciting Arizona and Spokane teams, but... and, of course, Julio Pablo Martinez should be playing. I believe that season opens June 2nd, and he'll be playing down in the Dominican for the first couple of weeks.
That's correct. That's what I saw today.
Yeah. He's got, apparently, he has a one-way visa. Once he enters the United States as a Cuban citizen, he can't leave without an enormous amount of paperwork, which is why I think they're letting him sit a little bit longer in the Dominican, just to get used to being part of a major league team and to try and get some language classes running for him, all that kind of thing. So that's big one for Rangers fans to keep an eye on. We got about a week, and then you can start box line scouting on JPM. He should be hopefully pretty fun.
Did you see T.R. Sullivan's note about him?
I did not know.
He said his success in Cuba suggests he can move quickly through the system. He could be in Arlington by 2020, but next season is not out of the question. That excited me.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys where you're going to have to see how much polish there is once you see him. You
right.
Know, he had some great lines in Serie Nacional, but as I talked about a couple of several episodes ago, you know, the pitching has been very spotty on the island in the last couple of years. So it's hard to say what that really means. He's 21, 22 years old, I think.
21.
Yeah, he's still really young. You don't really know what you've got. We've got a bunch of tools, and we're hoping that there's a baseball player which knocks some rust off. And it could be a really, really quick burn. I'm excited. He's going to be a really, really big name to watch, and hopefully he's coming stateside. I think I was reading that he's probably a high A or double A player right now. So I think what Rangers fans can be hoping for, if you're in the DFW area, is that he is Frisco-bound come July or August, which would be pretty exciting.
Yes, it would.
There's a couple other guys who might be Frisco-bound around that time, though. Most of them, and this is the big one, Rangers fans, most of them are pitchers. Ooh. Down East has a couple of really interesting arms, led by the big two are Jonathan Hernandez and Edgar Arredondo, both off to really, really good start so far for Down East. Hernandez just went and had that 10 strikeout game the other day. Was that a 7-inning performance?
I think it was in 6.
Anyone's heads?
6.
Ooh, nice. Even better.
Yeah.
The strikeout stuff is legit. He's got 62 strikeouts to 16 walks in 46 and a third innings. Oh, man, a strikeout pitcher? Like, is a Rangers prospect? We can have this? What is that?
What is the saying? Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn every now and then.
I hope we found one. This is one pitching blind organization historically, so that would be really cool.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of interesting arms on this team. I mean, my favorite guy coming into the season is Michael Machuella. He's struggled quite a lot. He's still somebody I really, really hope to see put it all together because, you know, if he can realize his potential. He's the highest ceiling arm in the entire organization, along with Hans Kraus. He's a potential frontline pitcher. He's just had so many injuries and so much inconsistency that it's hard to say if he'll ever actually get there. But Hernandez and Arredondo, Emerson Martinez has been pretty effective generally for Down East this year. Jake LeMoyne and Jacob Schortzleff have both been, they're at least intriguing arms in terms of strikeout stuff. C.D. Pelham is a name that I believe Tepid would have you know. And that team's got two interesting conversion types in Jairo Barras, one time forbidden fruit, super prospect, turned into super hard-throwing pitcher. He couldn't hit, but the dude can hit 98, so that's cool. And then Anthony Gose, outfielder, who's transitioning into a pitcher, is also on that team. So a lot of fun names. It would be really nice for me personally if Down East got to have more of their games televised. The Carolina League has not been very good for that. So I haven't seen many of these guys myself for more than, you know, highlight clip videos. But a lot of fun names on that team, and hopefully some names that we'll be seeing in Frisco relatively soon.
Yeah, Arredondo was actually named the Carolina League Pitcher of the Week earlier today. So
cool.
He's getting some recognition. That's their first honor for the season.
Congrats to him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's looking great.
There's a couple of bats on the team, too. Hayden, did you have any notes on hitters in there?
No. I don't.
Well, that would be a no.
I did not do that.
We'll edit that out. It's not all about the arms. Obviously, the big one that we talked about before was Leyte Taveras, Rangers' probable number one prospect. He's off to a pretty good start with Down East. The big thing for Leyte really was seeing if he could just stay consistent and then develop some of that game power. Folks who watch him think he's going to be able to grow into some more strength, but it hasn't showed up yet in his game. And we're seeing that of late. He's got a slugging up over 400. He's batting just under 280 on the season, on basing over 370. That's a really, really encouraging thing from a guy who's like 13 years old. So that's really, really cool. Got to be excited about Leyte. And he was just joined recently by one of our Hickory call-ups, former fairly high draft pick Eric Jenkins, who has been offensively a black hole for his entire professional career. 70 or 80 grade runner, super fast, excellent defender in center field, steals a lot of bases, but he has to get on base first, and he has not done that very much. But started out of the gates at Hickory really, really well, was hitting there. Folks were like, is he figuring it out, or is it just a guy who's playing his third turnaround in A-ball? So they sent him up to Down East, and he's batting 302 on basing 351 and slugging 415. Eric Jenkins might actually be a prospect again, and might be a very interesting prospect, because anybody who plays center field that well has an automatic position on a major league bench as a pinch runner and fourth outfielder. And if the bat can come into anything like he was considered as a prospect coming out of high school, that'd be very cool to have. Anderson Tejeda is a power-hitting shortstop prospect. He's pretty fun. Ladarius, the franchise Clark, is on that team as well. He's always fun to watch, just in the box scores at least. And there was a brief luminescent period in Lone Star ball history where he was the number one prospect in baseball. And then you have Charles LeBlanc, or as he's better known, Chuck the White, who has been mashing. He's somebody who I expect will be in Frisco by season's end as well. Mostly a third baseman. 302, 368, 515. Chuck is off to a very, very good start.
Yeah, it'll be...
Any other names here for Down East that jump out for you guys?
Yeah, one last thing that it's not really an opinion, so to speak, but it's just something that I came across. I don't even remember where I saw it. I think it was, I don't know, somewhere in the baseball internet, about Anthony Gosch's his interviews. Have you guys seen those?
No.
Okay.
I have not.
I'm glad. Okay, great. This is, I feel enlightened, sort of. I'll find a link and I'll tweet it out from the Rangers Rundown account. And I think the interview in particular is from whenever he was briefly in Astros camp, because they claimed him from the Rangers as Rule 5 guy.
Oh yeah.
He pitched, I think, one time, walked three batters, and then came back to surprise. Something just really odd like that. The way that he gives interviews,
Wait, is he the one who really hates giving interviews?
Well, I can't tell. I think so. I think so, but there's also, I think when I saw it, and when I was, you know, when I came across it, is that it was presented as like, oh, check out this funny bit that Anthony does where he hates reporters, but he's just messing with them.
Yeah, I think Levi said something about it.
Yeah, maybe that's where I saw it. Training. Yeah, and it's actually like, I don't know if he's messing with these people. He seems really mean. And anyways,
that sounds like good content.
Yeah, so I'll tweet that out from the Rangers Rundown account, and you guys should all watch that because it's bizarre. And I don't know. I mean, he's kind of a bizarre player. He made it to the major leagues and is now back in high A trying to pitch and also hit a little bit. He DH'd the other day, I saw. Yeah.
Wow,
so,
cool.
I mean, whatever. We'll see what happens with that. Baseball's changing, which, again, now I'm reminded of another topic we could talk about forever. An entire podcast about, like, the way that baseball is evolving on so many different levels is fascinating. I think a lot of – here's my five-second thought on that. People are just freaking out about, like, fly balls and strikeouts and offense and pitching and everything in between, attendance and streaming and whatever. I think it's all going to be settled. It's just a transition. I think we're all going to be all right. Mm-hmm. Everybody calm down. Baseball's still good. People still like baseball. And players are still going to perform. It's all good. It's part of the natural evolution.
Yeah, but I don't like change.
Yeah. Well, once our hitters learn how to hit against, like, every single pitcher throwing 98, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.
Good luck.
Yeah. Baseball's hard.
Are we talking like a week or two?
Yeah. Yeah.
Any day.
I don't know. I bet you, I mean, like within like 3-4 years, once these guys that are in the minor leagues, it's kind of like the pitch clock thing. They've been pitching with a pitch clock in the minors for so long. They're going to be facing some wicked arms in the minor leagues for so long. They're going to get up to the majors and strikeouts are going to go back down, I think.
Yeah.
But
I hope so. I mean, I think I'm with you, Hayden, where I'm not too freaked out by the fly ball revolution and everything's home runs and strikeouts and walks now. I think some of the things will normalize, and some of these things we're just not going to think were weird in a couple of years when that's the norm. I mean, if you took an 80s baseball fan and dropped them into the late 90s or early 2000s, they'd probably be doing the same thing. Like, why aren't you guys stealing bases all the time? You can hit it over the fence now? That's new and weird and bad, and I don't like it. And, the game changes constantly.
Yeah.
I mean, there was an article that I think Grant Brisby wrote on something that we're just about to get into, and he referenced how weird it would have been for 50s baseball fans to, you know, have Hell's Bells blasting out on the PA system as your closer comes into the game. Closer? What, because your first guy is too weak now? What kind of lame nonsense is this? You don't have a guy pitch the ninth inning. That's like, it's cheating. That's not even baseball anymore. You have to let the tired guy go out there and just give up his 230th pitch in the game. It's baseball, man. So, I mean, this stuff just changes all the time. The sport is not what it was 30 years ago, and it's not what it was 130 years ago, or really anywhere in between. You know, players are holdovers, and these multi-generational guys like Bartolo Colon are really interesting in that they're sort of dinosaurs walking amongst the birds. But that's just the nature of the game. All games change. Games are based off of arbitrary rules cooked up by a bunch of dudes in weird clothes, and that's how baseball is played. It's just a bunch of arbitrary rules played by dudes in pajamas, and that's baseball. We're all going to have fun with it. It's going to move around. It's going to change. I want it to look a little bit different when I'm 60 from when I was 6. I hope I still like it. I think I will. It's going to be a different game, though. I mean, everything changes. And one of those things that has been changing quite a lot that I referenced just there with the Brisby article is something that the Tampa Bay Rays have been doing this year. Hayden, you were talking about sort of freak stuff coming out of the minors. I think a lot of folks at baseball history would call what the Rays have been doing this season pretty freaky. So we referenced before our series with Tampa Bay that they run essentially a bullpen starter. One of their spots, they really only have a 3 or a 4-man rotation, just depending on how injured everyone is. I think Faria and Yonny Chirinos are both hurt right now. But they have a designated bullpen day, which has been, I mean, the team isn't very good, but it's been largely successful for them, I think, this season. It's odd. It's very weird. There's things that have definitely happened, but not as like a regularly scheduled thing. I thought it was something that was going to be really, really short-lived. I expected the Rays to be forced to have to call up somebody to stick into that rotation, that it just really wasn't going to stick around for very long. Not because it was not baseball or because the players wouldn't get into it. Just, it seems really hard. It's a lot of wear and tear on arms, and it seems like something at some point you'd luck into finding an extra starter. And they kind of did that, actually, with Yonny Chirinos, who I think was definitely one of those bullpen guys to start, but it's actually been one of their better starters now in Chris Archer division. But it's still going. I mean, we're almost in June, and they're still rolling out those bullpen days. So that's been interesting. There's some discussion I was seeing about the Rays perhaps pursuing multi-inning relievers, which isn't really a hot commodity on the free agent or trade market. You know, but the Alex Claudias of the world, dudes who can go 2 1/3 innings a couple of times in a week, and you put together a pile of those guys that can eat up a lineup once and call it a day. So I think it's been really fascinating in terms of this, like, baseball moving into new areas, that they've been able to sustain this bullpen experiment for a month. I think that's really quite cool.
Did you see what they did last weekend with Sergio Romo?
Yes, and that, I thought that was fascinating. It's something I've seen, like, written about before. Oh, Delino DeShields. Sorry, I need to turn this game off.
Yeah, no. Just keep rolling. Just keep rolling.
Delino. Oh, no. Defense, what is that? No, the Sergio Romo thing I thought was fascinating. Mike, you want to just, like, run through it real quick?
Sure, yeah. So they had him as the opener. So as opposed to having a closer, he comes out for the first inning. And they did this against the Angels. On Saturday, he struck out the side, which is impressive, and that actually helped contribute towards their win that day. The next day, he struck out 3 1/3, which I found intriguing that they would actually trot him back out for the second inning, but Ohtani pitched that game for the Angels, and you can probably figure out what the eventual outcome of that game was. But yeah, I mean, they were talking about this on the ticket, and what's intriguing about it is that if you look at WRC plus by inning, the first inning, it's the highest on average in Major League Baseball, and so to have a specialized guy come in for the first inning and shut those guys down could be almost as important as having a closer come in and shut down the last three guys. So don't know if this is something we'll catch on, but you got to figure out what to do, since these pitchers, they're just not making it through that third time through the rotation. Mm-hmm.
Well, and so you mentioned having a guy who comes in and does it as opposed to just the closer, but it's also kind of like the old fireman role. Like, you know, you got to face three really good hitters at the beginning of the game. So, like, right. Your closer comes in and maybe faces the 7, 8, 9 guys, which I was joking. I was talking to my wife watching the game the other night that, oh, we'll have Kella come in and face the 7, 8, 9, and that's going to be, oh, it's going to be Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres. And it's like, well, that's annoying. But for most teams, the 7, 8, 9 are probably pretty bad. And there's a good chance that you're facing 5, 6, 7 or 6, 7, 8. But going against 1, 2, 3 and just shutting those guys down to start the game off, to eliminate that first big inning that you were just talking about, Mike, that's mm-hmm. enormous. It's like, if you could start Andrew Miller and say, I know I can get to the second inning clean. I know Mike Trout's not going to hurt me the first time up. Wow.
Yeah, and what it does is, I'm fascinated by the chess piece, or the chessboard kind of gamesmanship that this brings into the table. Like, if you're Mike Socha, you know, then what do you do?
Noted chess player, Mike.
Yeah, Spencer. noted tactician and saber.
I mean, they definitely
pioneer
saber patrician.
The right place.
Yeah.
I mean, the Angels are really, really right-handed.
Yeah,
and they have Mike Socha as a manager. They're not going to do anything about it. So a guy who annihilates righties like Sergio Romo is a really, really good.
Yeah,
pick to do.
I mean, it's smart. It's one of the things that you know, you would do if you were, like, just doing simulation baseball. You say, of course I'm going to have the best pitcher guaranteed to face, you know, their best right-handed hitters, and their best hitters in general, because those are the guys that are at the top of the lineup every time. But it's fascinating to me kind of the ripple effect that this has. So if, let's say that Socha or the opposing manager wants to counteract a move like this, okay, let's say that they're playing the Rangers. Somebody does this against the Rangers and we're at full health. Okay, so now somebody is facing, we have a closer. We have Craig Kimball coming in to face Delino DeShields, Joey Gallo, Elvis Andrus, and Adrian Beltre or whatever. You know, those are the kind of the hitters coming up or something, for example. We don't want those guys to face Craig Kimbrel because those are our best hitters. So do you move one of those guys down in the order to maybe hopefully Kimbrel only goes one inning or goes 1 2/3 or something like that, and then you hope that
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa out there is a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
Come on, bro.
And then
someone's got to
You create supposedly the more advantageous matchup down the road when your better hitters are facing the non like Hall of Fame reliever. And then conversely, for the pitching team, what that does is, let's say you have your closer go two innings, let's say he pitches two clean innings, so now the third inning is going to start facing the 7, 8, and 9 hitters. What that does is that now you have your starting pitcher coming in. Let's just say then, you know, you kind of just swap some things around, and now you have Chris Archer or whoever is starting the third inning, and he gets to start out facing the, you know, the number 7 hitter. Well, now if you're afraid, like so many managers are, of having a starting pitcher go to see a lineup the third time through, well, the only time that he's going to face the, or when he's going to start seeing those guys for a third time, it's going to be the worst hitters on the team. So you're not facing Mike Trout for the third time when you're in the, you know, the very end of your rope. You're facing, like, you know, their backup catcher or their weak hitting second baseman or whoever for the third time. So you maybe might get more extension out of a starter that way as well. And just like that, you have your 8 innings completed or something like that. And obviously, if it doesn't work out with the opener, so to speak, like Sergio Romo was, then you're in a real bad spot. But it's fascinating. I don't think it's going to catch on, because I think part of it had to do with the fact that the Angels are so right-handed at the top of their order. But it props to Kevin Cash for actually doing it.
The chess match argument, I think, is a really interesting one, because if you go up to turn in your lineup and you know that the other team has a TBD up there, and you're suspecting that means they're going to throw an opener against you, do you go ahead and roll the dice and change your lineup? You know, do I say, well, okay, we're going up against the Rays, they might Romo us, should I stack my lefties up top? You know, should I move DeShields down to the bottom of the order here? Do I want to go with all of my lefties up at the front of this lineup? And then the lineup card gets handed over and Romo's not starting, and you're going up against whoever their actual, like Ryan Yarbrough is, who's their lefty, one of their starters. Then you've changed your lineup. You know, is there an advantage in letting teams think you might be using an opener and then not doing it? Some folks are, again, going to get mad at this and say it's not baseball and everything.
No, this is pure baseball.
It's a strategy. Like this is almost like Little League stuff. Like you might not know who the opposing, or really more like high school, where teams would do weird stuff, and then you'd pull out a kid from the outfield who's your team's only lefty pitcher just to mess with the opposing team. They didn't even know you had a left-handed pitcher, and you could do stuff like that. I don't know that enough teams are built to do that kind of thing now. Like, I don't know who the Rangers would use as an opener. We don't really have a guy who goes in there, unless you're talking about maybe going up against a team that's really, really heavily left-handed. If the Rangers could face it themselves, you could start like a Deke or maybe even let Claudio eat 2 innings at the beginning of the game and then see what happens. So we're not really set up for it. I think that Rays-Angels matchup was perfect for this. And even if it doesn't become a big thing, I think it's really cool. I thought it was pretty neat to see a guy start back-to-back games, which is the first time that seriously happened in a really, really long time. Although it wasn't the first time it's happened recently. Zach Greinke apparently started 3 straight games a couple years ago.
How did that happen?
Started a game, got ejected in the first inning, started the next game, that was the last game before the All-Star break. He started the first game after the All-Star break.
That's pretty cool.
That's a statistical oddity there.
Yeah, that's just weirdness. So Romo legitimately starting two games in a row, legitimately. I mean, he pitched an inning and an inning and a third. I think it's really cool. It's neat. That's sort of historical. And it's going to make me watch Rays games. There's very little in the world that would make me actually watch a Tampa Bay Rays game in 2018. And seeing what they're doing with their bullpen, that's interesting. I'm going to have to tune in more often.
Yeah, I think with their bullpen and the way that they're doing there's a lot of cynical opinions about what they're doing with their bullpen and their rotation and their whole pitching staff in general. But it's going to be really interesting to see how this holds up over 162, because we are a third of the way through the season right now, and that it seems to be working okay. But of course, when you're talking about bullpen arms, when you're talking about multiple innings appearances and really riding guys hard, it's not going to show up in May. It's going to show up in August and September and even into the next season. So this is going to be a long experiment. And I mean, I'm all for new things. I think that baseball has always evolved. It's always changed. Designated hitter, closers, in countless ways, the game is always kind of it.
Relievers being good is a relatively new.
Yeah, it is, and it's we are the game is sort of like an organism that is just adapting to like be more efficient, to be more effective, to be more successful, and it's finding those marginal values. And now that all these teams have sabermetric departments and can find the very very small advantages, and they say, hey, you should start Sergio Romo against this team, and why not? I mean, if it gives you an advantage to win the game, do anything for the victory, right? And that's what teams have been doing since baseball was invented. Mm-hmm. And
hopefully they keep doing it.
And we're just
I like teams that try to win.
Yeah, yeah. And these are just like the marginal wacky ways to do it, but I mean, if it's
someone's got to try it, and if it doesn't work, it goes away, and if it works, it becomes the thing that everyone
exactly
does. Yeah, so the Rays have been largely not a super watchable team, not a lot of talent on those rosters. The bullpen situation is going to make that very interesting. Two other teams that are probably not especially interesting to watch on television or in person, the Texas Rangers and the Kansas City Royals, and the baseball gods have blessed us with that as a four-game series. Royals at Rangers, two of the worst teams in baseball this year. Rangers come into this game with the sixth worst record in the league. Royals are the third worst. And usually you'd think, well, hey, cool, we'll maybe pick up a couple of wins here. But then we did just play the White Sox, who are the worst team in baseball. So we'll have to see. As we're recording this, Austin Bibbins-Dirks has made his first start of the season against Danny Duffy, who looked like he was turning into one of the true aces in baseball and has been really bad this year. We'll have to see how the offense reacts to a struggling lefty, and hopefully Austin can harness some of that sort of replacement-level goodness that he brought for us last year. Eric Skoglund and Mike Minor, another lefty-lefty matchup in the Friday game. Ian Kennedy and Bartolo Colon on Saturday. So this will be Bart's first start as a 45-year-old. Hopefully he's still got that mojo going for him. And then the Sunday game, Saturday and Sunday are both afternoon games, Saturday at 3 and Sunday at 2. Jason Hamill against Cole Hamels. So people can finally start really screwing up the spelling on both of those names right next to each other.
Yeah.
Because Cole Hamill and Jason Hamels, that happens all the time. So hopefully we see some more good Cole. We have talked about Cole as a trade prospect, and I know we will continue to talk about him in that way. It'd be very good to see him come out and rack up some good counting stats against a very, very bad Royals offense. I'm actually a little sad. The Royals have one pitcher I actually do like. Jacob Junis is a pop-up guy, kind of came out of absolutely nowhere. I feel pretty cool because I saw him in a spring training game and added him on my fantasy team, and he's been their best pitcher.
Congratulations.
Right, yeah, I'm a big brain genius over here, but we actually don't get to see their ace, their only pitcher with an ERA plus over, I don't know, like 80.
Oh, man, I didn't know it was that bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. This team is not good. They have like one good hitter.
Well,
no, Mike Moustakas is back. That's right. They have Moustakas and they have Jorge Soler.
There you go.
And Whit Merrifield is good.
Well,
there you go. That's the entire Royals.
There you go. Let's see if we win.
Top to bottom.
Yeah.
Means we'll probably get swept.
I mean, you got to get Bobby Wood Jr.
That's exactly where my mind went to.
Yep, I'm all by that school board watching on the 24th of May. I'm sitting here on tankathon.com. Ooh, yeah, we just need a couple of these losses.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a sad.
Honestly, this is it's kind of an important series where these are two really bad teams.
We've got some ground to make.
Yeah, I'm not rooting for the Rangers to lose. I can't do that. I want them to win as they are playing. But if we look back, let's say that we sweep the Royals, we look back at the end of the season as we're preparing for the, you know, what kind of our draft position is going to be, these games probably will be important. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, a couple of games here and there is the difference between picking first and picking fourth. Thanks, Tim Bogar.
Don't bring that up.
It's too late. I've already done it.
But at least we got Dylan Tate.
Don't bring that up either. I'll have none of that.
Oh, he's having a good year. We should be calling
him. Please no. Please no. Maybe we can get him.
Yeah.
And no, I'm done with that. I'm done with everything.
Well, that's enough psychologically tormenting Hayden for today, I think. Although, Mike, you want to do that again this weekend?
I think that should be a new segment.
Just messing with Hayden. Messing with Hayden
and just bring up like very specific facts about, I don't know, that...
Game six, maybe.
Well, that's good, Hayden. Kyle Hendricks.
No.
Let's talk about Ryan Dempster.
No, hey.
Well, before we cause any lasting damage,
let me
wrap it.
Let me do some, just like some self... Just self-harm, I guess, in terms of this. Do yourself a favor, listener, and look up what Jeremy Jeffress is doing as part of the ridiculous Milwaukee bullpen.
Yeah.
Look at how many former Rangers are in that bullpen.
Yeah.
Corey Knebel.
Also, shoving.
Pretty good.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. It's
just came back.
I don't know what happened with Milwaukee, man. There. I'll leave you with that. That's maybe a special podcast, like a Saturday episode. What happened with Milwaukee? It's a 30 for 30 episode. What if I told you
Milwaukee? I think they're like Bizarro Baltimore. They're like the exact opposite of what Baltimore is to the
something
Rangers.
Like that. Yeah. It's
What if I told you the Rangers got absolutely got on a trade?
What if the Rangers traded for two like? All-stars that stopped being even replacement level in a season, the last season that they had a chance to do anything with a competitive window, looking down the barrel.
I will never forget John Lucroy.
Oh, man. Okay, that's enough. That's enough. We're
Before this, anything is permanent here, I think we're going to have to wrap it for a Rangers rundown. Find us on Twitter. We're hopefully not like punching ourselves.
This has been terrible.
I'm going straight for the vodka as soon as we're out of here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm just desperately grabbing around my desk, hoping alcohol finds my hands.
All right, yeah.
It's not happening. We got to get out of here. So, thank you for listening.
And we'll see you later.
Get some
night.
Toodles.